Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Epochs. Sorry, wrong show. I mean, morning. How are you doing? I hope you're all well on this fine morning, chilly morning a bit, in Britain. It has just struck 8 in the a.m. and it is Monday. Monday, the 19th of January in the year of our Lord, 2026. You are watching Breakfast with Beau, the Beau Show, Beau's Breakfast Club, the BBC, the Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club. You are part of the glorious band, the chosen few. Without you, this doesn't happen. So thank you for tuning in. I'm joined by my producer, Harry. Little Harry, how are you, Harry?
Yeah, I'm good.
Great. Raring to go on this Monday morning.
Yeah. It's... It's going to be great.
That's a classic Monday morning feeling, isn't it? Okay, let's do it again. Okay. Now, wake up. It's going to be glorious. This week is the first week of the rest of your life. Let's do it. Let's jump straight in. Okay, the news. What's in the news? What's the world talking about this morning? Okay. The EU weighs up 93 billion euro retaliation and Raducanu's fine start. Raducanu, a tennis player. All right. Let's see. The Guardian. Oh. Harry. Oh. The goddamned Guardian. Damn them. All right, The Guardian still exists, unfortunately. It runs with, the EU weighs up 93 billion euro retaliation for Trump's Greenland, quote, blackmail, quote. So it's wall-to-wall Greenland this morning. It's almost entirely Greenland on the front pages anyway, you know, on the actual websites. There's more stories, but for the front pages, it's wall-to-wall Greenland. Okay, the powers that be, the cabal of newspaper editors, have decided that Greenland is the most important thing, pretty much, in the world going on. Targeting NATO allies is wrong, Starmer tells president in phone call. That's basically the story. That Europe is annoyed that Trump is threatening to put tariffs on EU countries for essentially not just going along with his plan of annexing Greenland. We'll talk about that in a bit of detail later on. It is basically every front page. All right, The Times. PM warns of a downward spiral in US tariffs row. Okay, let's just get into it. So Trump has said, obviously, he's made it very clear, for a long time as well, actually, to be fair, he has made it clear for a long time that he would like Greenland. He thinks it's in the US's national interest to control and own Greenland, particularly the waters off of Greenland and all the natural resources that are there. But ostensibly, it's about the waters, controlling the waters around Greenland. But it's only in the, isn't it? It's only in the last few months, or since his new administration, that he's actually getting really quite tough on it. Sort of, everyone's sort of taking him at his word that he really means it. Now, over the weekend, or was it right at the end of last week, various EU countries or NATO countries sent all sorts of troops and helicopters and things over to Greenland for exercises. Now, that's a classic thing. Military exercises are sort of politically charged, aren't they? You know, like when South Korea do military, and the US do military exercises right up to North Korean waters, right up to North Korean airspace. Or the other way around, North Korea does exercises right up to the limit. Russia do exercises right up to the limit of their neighbours' space, airspace and borders and things. It's a classic. It's all over the world. It happens all the time. Right, so it just sends a message, doesn't it? Or when the big countries, the nuclear armed countries, doing nuclear test at a particular moment. That's a classic thing as well. Doesn't happen much anymore. Because nuclear testing is almost a thing of the past. But it used to be, there would be like a, you know, back in the 60s, I'm talking, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, there'd be some sort of big meeting between powers, and they'd sort of test a nuclear weapon the day before. Just, you know, it's a message. Remember, we've got nukes, sort of thing. The French used to test nukes quite a lot, deep into the 90s. Anyway, so yeah, NATO countries sent a bunch of military forces to Greenland to do exercises there, you know, against Trump's wishes. Britain's contingent, because we got involved, even Britain was involved in that. It was all countries like France, Germany, Finland, a number of them, 6 or 7 or 8 of them. Britain sent one guy. We sent one soldier, obviously a complete token, bit of a joke really. But still, just to, again, just to send the message, we are on that side of the ledger. We don't like Mr. Trump having designs on Greenland. We're lining up with Denmark against the US. It's not really an expedient thing to do, but anyway, our government always seems to act not in our best interests. Okay, so that happened. Trump sees it, obviously. And he's like, right, anyone that does that, 10% tariff. Straight away, 10% tariff for that. That's the punishment for that. And if you keep doing it, or if you don't change your tune in the next few weeks, in the next couple of months, there's going to be a 25% tariff. So some people are calling that blackmail. I mean, kind of, a little bit. You could describe it like that, I suppose. I wouldn't. It's not really blackmail in the truest sort of clean sense of the word blackmail, but you could describe it like that. It's not a ridiculous take, but it's just leverage, isn't it? You put it another way, I would call it just like leverage, just playing politics, isn't it? But there you go. So Keir Starmer apparently had another phone call with the Donald. Bet the Donald couldn't wait for that one. He was on tenterhooks for that one. He was shaking in his boots. Apparently in that phone call, Starmer says, had chastised the president that it's wrong to sort of make conflict economically or otherwise with European partners and NATO partners, allies, people that are all supposed to be allies. Well, I said it before, I think I said it on the main Lotus Eaters podcast at one point. Just try and imagine it. And this isn't me playing defence necessarily for the US, but I'm just saying, imagine it purely from the point of view of someone like Pete Hegseth. He would probably argue, I would think, the thinking sort of in the Pentagon and in the State Department, Marco Rubio and stuff, they would be thinking, you know, is Denmark really much of an ally? Hasn't the US been telling them for over 20 years to sort themselves out in Greenland, to start defending Greenland's waters properly? Because if they can't do it, someone else will need to. Haven't we been telling them that for 20 years and have just ignored it, just fobbed it off? Yeah, all right, we'll do it. And they don't do anything. So just for a moment, look at it from that point of view. Someone like Keir Starmer now ringing Trump up and saying, you're wrong. Can you imagine Trump being, yeah, all right. Yeah, all right, mate. Whatever. Like the special relationship is on the line, is it? Was there ever really much of a special relationship after 1945? Or ever, really? For anyone who doesn't know what that is, just real quickly, just to say. During the war, I've shaved my sideburns off, so I'm a little less Uncle Albert today. But during the war, World War II, I mean, there was a so-called special relationship between the US and Britain. We'll forget that Roosevelt just watched in during the Battle of Britain during 1940 and just watched that happen. Roosevelt was all like, let's see where he's going with this. Before they decided to truly, properly get involved. There was a special relationship because Sir Winston Churchill was actually half American, like my good self, actually. Churchill's mum was an American woman, if you didn't know that. So Churchill was like half American. And anyway, Churchill knew, he calculated that if he was to, if the Allies, if Britain and the Allies were to win the war, really needed the United States to come in on our side. You know, they didn't, until Pearl Harbor. In fact, a bit more detail on that. They actually were sending loads and loads of help, sort of, with the merchant navy and sorts of, and all that sort of thing before Pearl Harbor. They were actually helping out quite a lot before Pearl Harbor, but they weren't formally in the war. They weren't formally at war with Mr. Hitler's Germany until the Japanese attacked them, and then Hitler declared war on the America, actually. But anyway, the point is, there's a special relationship, at least in Churchill's mind, during the war. Ever since then, literally ever since then, people talk about the special relationship between the US and the UK. You know, all the way up to sort of the Blair years and after the Blair, you know, during the Iraq War with George Bush Jr. and Tony Blair. It's always like the special relationship. Britain is America's first ally. We stand shoulder to shoulder with the US. Whatever the US does, we'll be their little mini-me, like goading them on from behind their shoulder. Yeah, go on, get them. And to this day, people still talk about the special relationship, don't they? It's a cliche now. That time in the first Trump administration when he went and visited North Korea, Trump said, and it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but he said, we now have a special relationship with North Korea. Anyway, the idea now that there's something like these days, 2026, that there is any kind of real special relationship, just doesn't ring true anymore. I don't think it has for years and years. I mean, even if you go back to the 1950s, you could argue the way the US left us in the lurch in the Suez Crisis in the 1950s, and the way the US tried to screw the British over about when Britain tried to get its own nuclear weapons in the 50s. You could say the special relationship died relatively soon after World War II. You could make that argument. You could also make the argument that, you know, who is a closer ally to the US if not the UK, though? Could also look at it through that lens if you wanted to. Point is, I think, Trump and Starmer, there's nothing special there, is there? I don't think Trump gives a fig what Sir Keir says and thinks about anything, really. Just doesn't care. Trump's completely his own man. Trump knows his own power. He knows the power of the US military. He doesn't need Keir for anything. He doesn't need his advice, anything. He could do without it. And yet Keir will ring him up and say, you're wrong to do XYZ. I'm going to send one man to Greenland. That'll show you. Right, let's move on a little bit. I will talk about it more. Baroness Cass, a nobody, backs ban on social media for under 16s. Is that government overreach? Probably, yeah. And there's Emma Raducanu. It's not Raducanu. Raducanu was a 90s football player. Raducanu. Emma Raducanu, who apparently is a British woman. I mean, her dad's Romanian, her mum's Chinese, and she was born in Canada. But okay, she's the British number one. She's a British tennis player now. Okay, if you say so. She's pretty mediocre, as I understand it, at tennis, I mean. But she's kind of pretty, so all the papers will simp over her. Bit like Anna Kournikova. Harry, do you remember Anna Kournikova? Is she before your time?
I think she's a little bit before my time.
Okay. There was a tennis player, Anna Fornikova, and she was really pretty. Like, pretty mediocre at tennis, though. I don't think she ever won a Grand Slam or anything. She was competitive, obviously, but didn't set the world alight in terms of actually winning tennis matches. But she was really pretty, so she was always on the front pages and in the headlines, and Anna Kournikova. It's a bit like this with this Raducanu. Like, she's won her opening match at the Australian Open. What? Who cares? But there you go, she's quite pretty, so they'll make her a star. I'll make her a star, baby. All right, the Financial Times, the FT. Going with Greenland. Oh, yeah, EU primes for €93 billion retaliatory tariffs to parry Trump's Greenland threats. Leverage for meeting at Davos. Davos is happening soon, by the way. That's a thing. The WEF Davos conference. Hopes for White House climb down. NATO relationship at risk. So yeah, where Donald Trump says, I'm going to slap 10% tariffs on you, and if you don't back down, it'll be 25% tariffs. The EU, as a bloc, have said, you don't tariff us. We'll tariff you, if anything. We'll slap tariffs on you to the tune of 93 billion euros, or something like 80 billion pounds, that is. Again, does that really make any sense? Is that in the interests of the average European person? Does Trump care particularly about that? Isn't he the more powerful partner in that relationship? I mean, he's obviously the more powerful partner in the US-UK relationship. They're the more powerful partner in the US-EU relationship. So, I think it's funny, even when the EU puts tariffs or sanctions, economic sanctions, against Russia, even just Russia on its own, whose economy isn't gigantic. I've heard people say that I think like the economy of California is bigger than all of Russia, or the economy of like just Texas is bigger than all of Russia, things like that. The Russian economy isn't a powerhouse. And even so, when I see the Europeans say, you know, we're gonna sanction Russia, and Russia's like, are you? Okay, I mean, we've got more resources than you. We've got a big enough population and a sophisticated enough sort of society and political system that, I mean, sure, it'll hurt you just as much as that hurts us. Don't you need our gas? Aren't you dependent on us for energy in various ways? But you're going to sanction us. Okay, good luck with that. I feel like something similar sort of dynamic is going on when the EU's going to put tariffs on the US. It's like, doesn't that just hurt you? Don't you import loads of American things? All right, cutting your nose off to spite your face a bit, I think. Maybe not, maybe not. Okay, yeah, but NATO, the NATO relationships, all the relationships are at risk. Yeah, I don't care. I don't like NATO. It's just me, just my take now for a minute or two about NATO. I don't like NATO. I don't want it. In Bose Britain, if I was Prime Minister, I would, at first, scale back all NATO responsibilities and monies we give to NATO, scale that back, and when they got all pissed off about it, no doubt the US would get all pissed off about it. I'd be like, right, we're going to leave it then. How about that? How'd you like that? It's a thing of the past, in my opinion, NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organisation. It's a thing of the past. It's a Cold War thing. It's a post-World War II thing. It was to prevent Stalin from taking West Germany. Ultimately, that's what it was. Right? Because at the end of the war, you know, Stalin, the Red Forces had occupied all of Eastern Europe, you know, and East Germany and everything. And so we feared that the next war, World War III, would be in West Germany when the Reds invaded West Germany. Like, that was just going to happen at some point. And so we needed to be ready for it. Everyone needed to gang together and just be ready for it at all moments. Like, you know, the second Russian tanks spill over into West Germany, we've got to be ready for World War III at that instant. That's what NATO was originally for. We don't live in that world anymore, do we? We don't live in that world. I wouldn't care if NATO ceased to exist. I really wouldn't. There's a lot of Estonians out there all pissed off. Oh, you can't say that. Oh, I don't care. It's just another tool in America's arsenal to sort of dominate things. I don't see NATO. Come on, NATO goes around the world now, sort of trying to bully people, bully its way around the world, destabilizing the world, if anything. Right, people are pro-NATO. People would argue it's NATO that keeps the peace in Europe, is it? Or is it NATO that's endlessly poked the Russian bear in the eyeball with a dirty stick? Okay. China seizes on wavering US influence to pour record sums into Belt and Road. Yeah, China. Right, China's the bigger thing now, I would say. I'd agree with Steve Bannon on that. That it's not the threat of Russia invading, like, Bonn in West Germany. That's not really the worry anymore, is it? It's more like the Chinese trying to dominate vast parts of Asia and Africa and anywhere else they possibly can. Stop thinking about NATO and start thinking about some sort of global organisation that all ally together against Chinese influence. Doesn't that make more sense in 2026? I don't know. Okay, The Independent. Raducanu's won an opening match. Europe delivers a warning to Trump after tariffs threat. EU plan €93 billion retaliatory tariffs as Sir Keir Starmer tells the president punitive new levies to force the sale of Greenland would be wrong. It's the wrong thing to do. Is Keir Starmer thinking about US interests or just the interests of the entire North American continent? No, he's not. He's just thinking like it's virtue signally to be anti-Trump. That's what he's thinking, surely. Is it anything more than that? That it's like modish or cool to be anti-Trump? That all his EU partners are anti-Trump. So he's going to just jump on that bandwagon. Because it's a reasonable argument, I think. I think it is sort of reasonable that the United States wants to be able to completely control and dominate the waters around Greenland at the expense of Russia and China. I'm not sure if that argument is complete nonsense. It's just some insane thing Trump dreamed up out of nowhere. I don't think so. But okay. The Express, it's a good paper, fears Trump's tariffs threat will rip NATO apart. Yeah, rip it apart. Okay. It's basically America anyway, isn't it? NATO, really. It's basically all their money and their hardware anyway. I mean, if you're someone super hardline, like, say, Hegseth, you might even think, oh, like, NATO's just an annoying thing to us now. We just want to be able to act unilaterally wherever we want, whenever we want. How is NATO, like, not just getting in the way of that at this point, from his point of view, I mean? Oh, lovely, lovely cup of tea. Okay, what else we got? The Mail, the Daily Mail, NATO now, quote, heading for disaster, quote, in Trump row. I mean, maybe. I suspect, one little personal take. I suspect NATO won't be ripped apart and torn apart and sort of cease to be a thing because America still doesn't want it to be. So it won't be. So, you know, like, that's it. Like, you know, like power, when it really boils down to just power. America still wants NATO to be a thing, so it will be. Right? Even if the individual NATO countries are sort of unruly or don't do exactly as they're told. Like, America has so many bases all over Europe, so many bases, like giant bases in Germany, still left over from World War II. Giant bases in Germany. All over Britain are US Air Force bases, all over the place. Scattered all over the place. If all the European NATO countries suddenly decided, right, we hate Donald Trump so much, and we hate his designs on Greenland so much, that we're going to sort of back out and leave NATO because screw him. What would that actually look like? I don't think they've got the political capital, the political will, to really do that. Because it would mean completely realigning themselves on a load of different levels with the US. It would obviously put them badly in the US naughty book. But then there would just be the logistics of it, the reality of it. You know, imagine a country like Germany. Let's take Germany, for example. Or Britain. If we just said, we're annoyed with you, Mr. Trump, and so we're going to have to back out of NATO. What, and expel all those military personnel that are there and close down the giant US bases, Air Force bases and things, and incur the ire of the US on multiple levels. I don't think any of the those governments have got the balls to do something like that. And we don't think they have. Right, Keir Starmer sent one guy. That's the level of his balls, his political guts, to make big moves. Sending one guy to Greenland. He hasn't got the guts to just tell America, you're closing all your bases now. All your bases are ours now. I don't see that. I don't see that. All this is just headline stuff, I think. Greenland is a storm in a teacup at the minute, anyway. I think. A bit of a storm in a teacup. UK officials warning the EU aims £81 billion trade bazooka at America. We're aiming a trade bazooka at America. That's what's happening, according to the papers. It's a trade bazooka. Give me a break. In call, Starmer tells President he's wrong over tariff war threat.
All right.
The I paper. Trade war looms with America as UK and EU unite against Trump's Greenland threat. I mean, what can they really, really do? All right, what are the sub-headlines? So Keir Starmer is in an 11th hour scramble to save the UK-US's relationship, special relationship. Following Donald Trump's threat to hit countries who oppose him taking control of Greenland with 10% tariffs. In the biggest crisis to hit the special relationship in decades and the greatest threat to NATO, the PM is aligning with the EU, which is preparing to launch £80 billion worth of retaliatory trade bazooka. Number 10 said Starmer spoke to Trump to stress the importance of the transatlantic partnership, telling him applying tariffs on allies for pursuing the collective security of NATO is wrong. Like Trump's like, I'll tell you what's right and wrong. I'll tell you what NATO thinks and is going to do. I'll tell you that, not the other way around. I imagine. He probably didn't say that, but that is the reality of it. But the PM is being urged to cancel the King's US visit in April to mark the 250th anniversary of American independence. And he warned that the tariffs risked a, quote, dangerous downward spiral, quote. Okay. Again, like that really matters. Storm in a teacup stuff, right? Oh, King Charles might not visit the US in April. Again, in the scheme of things, that doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. Why we send the king over for the 250th anniversary anyway is a bit funny. I don't know why I'd be going anyway. If I was the king, like a real king, like an actual monarch, a real sovereign who had power, if I was king of England and it was the 250th anniversary of the American independence, because Charles can't do what he wants. He does what the government tells him to do. The government says, you're going over visiting America now, or you're not going over to visit America now. King Charles just has to go, okay. Like the king or queen hasn't got very much power. Hardly any, really. They get their little red boxes like a government minister. They get told what to do. They literally get given a speech. Like, here's a speech you're reading out now. That's the level of the power of the king. But if I was king, you know, with real power, I'd be like, no, I'm not going to America for the 250th. Really? That was an embarrassment to us. That was the diminishing of our power and influence and authority. Why would we be go over there and... Okay. So Keir may tell the king to cancel his US visit. Big news. Big news, everybody. All right, the Daily Mirror. There we go. Just it's blackmail. Blackmail! Biggest possible headline. Blackmail! Trump's Greenland madness. It's madness. It's mad that he would try and act in the interests of his own nation. It's madness. It's blackmail that he's trying to defend US water, US adjacent waters from Russian or Chinese influence. That's a madness. Is it? Are the planners in the Pentagon just completely mad to think that and want that? And covet the waters, because Denmark isn't doing anything. A picture of one Denmark ship there. Sure, the Chinese Navy are terrified. Is the Chinese and Russian Navy terrified of the Danish Navy? No, they're not. Is even the Russian or Chinese merchant fleet terrified of the Danish Navy? Will they do anything the Danish Navy asks them to do? Probably not. Would they even come across the Danish Navy? Practically never. So is it mad for the planners at the Pentagon and the State Department to covet those waters? Is it really just that Donald is high on power? He's gone mad on power. No, I don't think so. Anyway, fury over tariffs threat as PM tells president he's wrong. UK united with Denmark. Oh yeah, they'll trot out someone like Lisa Nandy. Complete moron cretin, Lisa Nandy. Open borders globalist Runnymede Trust Lisa Nandy. They'll trot out that moron and say, we stand shoulder to shoulder with Denmark. Only Denmark should be able to control the destiny and future of Greenland. Can you imagine what the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the Pentagon think when they see Lisa Nandy? They probably don't even see it. But if they did, imagine the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Pentagon, the most senior generals and admirals of the US military, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines. They're sitting round a table and Lisa Nandy comes on their screens saying, only Denmark, only the Kingdom of Denmark should be able to dictate the future of Greenland. It'd be like, it's like you barely register. It'd be laughable to them, I imagine. Okay, the metro. Really? Really, metro? You're a thing? You're still a thing? Right, the metro, one of the worst rags, arguably the worst, I would say perhaps the worst. Reclaiming the tea break. Oh, they're talking about tea. Again, not serious. It's not serious paper. That's going to be cold. Yeah. I have to revert just to simply water to wet the whistle. All right, it's a story, they think, it's the front page, that Britons, apparently, are taking less tea breaks whilst at work. People used to take more tea breaks and now they take less tea breaks. Brilliant. The Star. What slop have we got on the Star? Oh, ah, Bez. Good old Bez. You won't know the Happy Mondays, will you, Harry? You don't know who Bez is, do you? Or do you?
He looks very friendly.
Can't hear you, sorry.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Your mic's not working, but I can hear him and he's saying he doesn't know. He's not sure. Okay. There was a band years ago, 30, 35 years ago, the Happy Mondays. And that guy called Bez. I like Bez, by the way. Let's be clear. I'm a Bez fan. I'm not throwing shade at good old Bez. And Bez was in the Happy Mondays. And he wasn't even, like, he didn't even play an instrument. His job was to go out there, and while the Happy Mondays played, he would just dance around on the stage. That was it. Sometimes visibly high on drugs. That got a laugh out of Harry. Sometimes he'd play the maracas. Sometimes he'd have the maracas going. Good old Bez. So the news is that the Happy Mondays are doing a 35-year anniversary tour. Like, that's it. Don't worry, Bez happy is the headline. It's like, don't worry, be happy. And the headline is, like, it's Blue Monday, you know, don't... Bez cheers you up every day of the week because he was relentlessly happy. That's what Bez is. He's sort of relentlessly upbeat and optimistic and dancing around, possibly on an E. So Bez, there you go. It brightens up your Monday morning. Brighten up your Monday morning with septuagenarian Bez. I don't know how old he is, actually. He's got to be knocking on, though, hasn't he? 35 years ago, in the 35-year anniversary tour of the Happy Mondays. That's some great songs. That's some great songs, Happy Mondays. Again, I'm a fan of the Happy Mondays and Bez. But is that the front page? Is that the most important thing going on in the world? No, The Sun. Oh, The Sun. again, the sun's going with that story of that Jesse, that little mix, Jesse Nelson. That she's got two babies, she's got twins, and they're sort of terribly ill. They've got some sort of terrible disease. For some reason, the Sun are obsessed with this story. They've put it on their front pages. What, this is the third time in 2 weeks, is it? Jesse love split after twins' agony. Her engagement is off to focus on the sick twins. So there's her partner there. I don't know if you can see that. It's quite small. He's left her now. I would have thought if the babies are terribly ill, that's the time you should stay by your spouse or partner even more. That's the time when they need you the most, isn't it? Nope, according to that guy, whose name is Zion Foster, Mr. Foster, there, has decided to leave her. No further comment. Okay, let's have a look at the actual websites. Oh yes, there's a big train crash in Spain. Various death tolls I've seen. This one says 21. I've seen one other said 28 or 29 people. Apparently one train derailed and was hit by another at high speed. Horrible. Train crashes can be like nightmarish. All people twisted up and mangled up, which I won't dwell on it, but terrible train crash in Spain. There you go. Terrible train crash in Spain. Okay, here's a story. There's been another defection to reform of a sitting MP. Right, so now they're up to, what, seven? So now reform have got seven MPs. And one thing I was reading said that puts them on the same number as Sinn Féin. Not that Sinn Féin send their MPs to Westminster. But so now Reform have got the same number as Sinn Féin. It's only the big parties and the SNP that have got more. If Reform get two more, they'll have the same number as the SNP. If they get one more than that, then they'll be like the fourth biggest party in the whole of Parliament. After the big ones, after Labour, Tory, Lib Dem. So seven MPs, it's ticking up. You might wonder, why isn't this that the Honourable Andrew Rosendale MP, why isn't his defection on the front page of any of the papers? Because nobody cares about Andrew Rosendale. That's why. I mean, it is important. It is kind of important news, I think. Right? For every time an actual MP, sitting MP, defects to reform, that's quite big news. It's quite important, I think, relatively speaking. But this didn't get on the front page of anything. Why exactly? It's because Andrew Rosendale, MP, is a complete nothing man. Sure, it ticks up Reform's number by one, ticks the Tories down by one. But Rosendale, the man, is a nothing burger. He's a complete nothing burger of a man. I happen to know Andrew Rosendale. Not like he's a mate. Not that I've got his number in my phone. But he's the MP for Romford. Now, I was born and raised in Romford. Actually, not in Romford. In the constituency of Romford. But I was actually born and raised and went to school and everything in a little satellite town next to Romford. Romford was like the big town nearby. Right? So, it's in East London, or Havering, the London Borough of Havering. It's in Essex, where London peters out to the east and becomes Essex. Havering, that's where Romford is. Okay, so he's been my MP my whole adult life. Well, I became an MP in the year 2001. Right, so basically my entire adult life, he was my MP. Andrew Rosendale. I've met him a number of times. I've met him like, I don't know, five, six times, maybe more. You walk around Romford, sometimes you just see him out there, you know, with a little rosette on, a little table, you know, canvassing around election times. Sometimes outside Romford Station or Gidea Park Station, he might just be there occasionally, around election times. Go to a school fete, he might be there, you know. I've shook his hand like five or six times, you know, I've met him. One time, in fact, years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I sent him a letter saying, when I was interested in politics, when I was doing my master's degree in politics, I said, well, as my MP, can I sort of meet you and sit down and talk to you a bit about all various things? He blanked it for like a year or two and eventually said, yeah, go on then, all right then. So I met him in Portcullis House in Parliament in Westminster. We sat down, we had lunch together, I talked to him for like a couple of hours. So I actually have met and know Andrew Rosendale a little bit, right? Again, it's not a mate, but I know him. I've spoken to him for quite a while. I had a long conversation with him. Okay. Now, it's a pretty safe Tory seat. He's been the MP since 2001. He used to enjoy a very, very big majority, very big majority, among like top 10, top 20 majorities. Super safe seat, Romford. Tories, super safe Tory seat. Like his majority used to be, was always like 17,000, 21,000, whatever, in that ballpark. You know, he's definitely, definitely going to win every time. At the last election, it went down to 1,400. So it's not a safe Tory seat anymore. Why, you ask? Well, one, because of the Tory treason of the previous 14 years, of course. But also the demographic of Romford has utterly, utterly changed. Wherein, like, even in 2010, 2014, it was much the same as it has always been. Basically white, you know, Tory voting, white Essex. Now it's a foreign area. I mean, really. They're trying to build mosques all over the place. You walk down the high street, it's mainly black and brown faces. I mean, really, completely changed in the space of 5 years, six, 7 years. Utterly, utterly changed. A story that has played out up and down the length and breadth of this country. Well, now Rosendale has obviously made the calculation that he is more likely to get re-elected if he joins Reform. There you go. But the man himself, I mean, an empty shirt, a man without a chest, you know, just a career politician, just a nothing man, right? Romford's rotten egg. It was good on Europe, though. He was always a staunch leaver. He's considered on the right of the Conservative Party. He's one of the right wingers of the Conservative Party. Not that he's right wing at all. Not that he's got any real political proper moral convictions or anything, or not that he's prepared to sort of shout from the rafters. But he was always a staunch leaver, give him that, right? Little bit of credit where little bit of credit is due. He was always a staunch leaver. But he was always a backbencher, really. I mean, in that picture, there he is, he's standing at the back. He's a backbencher. I think he was like some sort of very, very minor shadow undersecretary or something or other, but essentially a backbencher. You've never seen Andrew Rosendale in cabinet on the front benches, all throughout the Cameron years, the May years, Boris years, Rishi, whatever. Now, because even the Tory party are like, Andrew Rosendale, the Tory party win an election, they're going to pick from all their MPs who they're going to make senior ministers and be in cabinet. Andrew Rosendale doesn't get a look in because he's an empty shirt. He's a nothing man. He's a joke, really. I mean, when this happened, there was one quote from the Conservative Party HQ, and they said, oh, you're welcome to him. That was literally the line. That was literally the quote. Oh, you're welcome to him. He's an annoyance to them, an embarrassment to them. He's just an and finally guy. He's just a, oh, yeah, Romford, Andrew Rosendale. We don't care what he thinks and does about anything, really. He's not like one of us almost. He's like, ugh, just be quiet and sit on the backbench, Andrew. He's a classic backbencher, in other words. Right, he doesn't write important, interesting opinion pieces for The Telegraph or anything. He doesn't do firebrand speeches where he actually stands on his conviction in Parliament. I remember one time, the only time I ever remember him standing up and making a speech, he's probably done more, but the only one I can recall, and this just gives you a measure of it, is that he once, a few years back, decided in a more or less empty chamber to do a little speech about the cruelty of animals in circuses. Right, fair point. I don't want animals in circuses to be treated cruelly, but, like, really? That's what you're going to do? That's, like, that's your level, is it? Talking about that. And even people in the Tory party are just sitting there, like, with their heads in their hands, like, tutting, like, oh, get on with it, Andrew. Let's just get through this. Who let Andrew Rosendale speak? That's Andrew Rosendale. Okay. But he is considered on the right of the Tory party. Again, nothing right about it. He was a massive fan of Thatcher, Lady Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher. Massive, massive fan. He's like a classic Tory boy. He's living out his childhood dream of being a Tory boy. But even that is now his majority is 1400. He's decided that Nige is what's needed to save the country. Andrew Rosendale, Romford's Rotten Egg. Okay, what else have we got? Credit Score Company encouraged me to borrow again when I was nearly debt free. Little word on debt. For anyone out there who's in debt, struggling with debt, thinking about getting a credit card, thinking about taking out a loan. Don't do it if you can possibly do it. If you're already in debt, make that your life's priority to get out of debt. If you haven't got any debt or big borrowings, or you haven't got a credit card, and you think, oh, I'll just get a credit card so that I can afford a car or a holiday, that's mad. Don't live beyond your means if you can possibly help it. I mean, it sounds really obvious to say, but like, because credit card companies will try and offer you credit, won't they? Particularly if you're not already in credit or you've only got a small amount of debt. Have money, have this. It's all a trap. It's all designed to get you so they can get the interest. If you're in debt, make it your life's priority to get out of debt as quickly as possible. It's easier said than done. I know. And I don't want to get all preachy, so I'll move on. But debt is a terrible, terrible thing. Try not to be in debt. If Uncle Bosey can give you any life advice, try not to be, as I say, preachy, tell people what to do and how to live their lives. I don't actually like doing that, but I think this is sound advice. Get out of debt as quickly as possible. Don't allow yourself to go into debt. All right. US believes its power matters more than international law, UN chief tells BBC. Well, yeah, they would, wouldn't they? It does, doesn't it? Again, I don't want to be a cheerleader for the State Department and the Pentagon. It's just reality, isn't it? Isn't that just reality? Of course, the UN's going to be annoyed. The UN, like the NATO, is like, oh, but we control the world. We tell people what they can and can't do and think and say, don't we? No, not really. Not really. No. Beijing and Washington have the power, and Moscow a bit. They've got the power. Not the UN building in New York. Okay, let's move on. ITV News. Oh, it's already 1:45. Let's whip through a bit then, because it's mainly the same stuff. Starmer and Trump had a conversation. Look, Andrew Rosendale there. Oh, he's also a bit of a moron as well. Like, as an intellect, as a political mind, there's nothing there. There's really, really nothing there. Okay, Prince Harry to face Daily Mail's publishers in court. What you need to know. I don't need to know. Don't need to know anything about that. Don't care. Harry suing various papers over... Channel 4, let's not even look at Channel 4. They're an absurd organ. Sky News, that terrible Spanish train crash. See, yeah, that one says there's 39 people have been killed. Looks rough. Looks rough. The Mail online. Trump says he no longer feels an obligation to think purely of peace after being refused Nobel Peace Prize in extraordinary Greenland letter. Yeah, Trump has always wanted a Nobel Peace Prize, thinks he deserves one, thinks he's owed one. I mean, whether you agree with that or not, I would say it's a bit old school, the old dynamic boomer worldview that a Nobel Peace Prize means anything, really. Who cares what that committee, the Nobel Prize committee, thinks? Why would you care what they think, particularly? Worry about what the court of history will think of you. Nobel Peace Prize. It's not the 70s. Why would you care about that, really? Newlywed couple. Okay, don't care about newly individual stories about... Okay, a royal family thing. Fergie just made her first smart choice in months. One royal can heave a sigh of relief. Sarah Ferguson. Do we care what Prince Andrew, disgraced ex-Prince Andrew, now just Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, what his ex-wife does and thinks about things that no one cared about anyway, that was a butt of jokes anyway, Sarah Ferguson, Fergie. Europe can weaponise US bases against Trump's Greenland takeover in major NATO split. Yeah, that was something I was saying earlier about all the US bases that are in Europe. Like, if they decided, again, I said, I don't think they will. They haven't got the guts to do it. But if the European countries decided, like, we're going to sort of unilaterally just take all your hardware that's in our country, like all the American fast jets that are in Germany. Like, if there's, like, F-22s or F-35s or whatever, dozens of them maybe, in Germany or in the UK, and the UK or German government just said, they're ours now. Again, they wouldn't have the balls to do that, I don't think. All right, what's the sun doing? What's the sun saying? Oh, yeah. Poor Jesse Nelson's partner has decided to run away. Good guy. Seems like a nice guy. All right, the New York Slimes. China's birth rate plunges to lowest level since 1949. The country's birth rate fell to the lowest level since the founding of the People's Republic of China, as policymakers failed to slow a demographic crisis. Still the most populous country in the world, isn't it, China? Like, easily. Or did India overtake them in recent years, perhaps? But still, I don't think China needs to worry at this point about not having enough people. Real estate crash weighs on China's economic growth. Okay, New York Times going with all sorts of Chinese things this morning. Can Vietnam's Communist Party supercharge its economy with private enterprise? I don't know, can it? Why the New York Times is interested in all these sorts of things. EU leans towards negotiating, not retaliating, over Trump's tariff threat. If you say so, New York Times. The Washington Post, European nations weigh retaliation after Trump's Greenland threats. Okay. FBI opened probe on Minneapolis shooting. None exists now, Justice Department says. Yeah, from what I read last week, that individual police officer or ICE agent that shot that woman through the windscreen was not going to face any charges for that. So I thought that was old news by this point. So there is no FBI probe into it anymore. Yeah, I think they had a look at it and decided, at the very least, they decided if this went to court, we would lose. So we're not even going to take it to court. That's often the way the powers that be go, whether it's the Justice Department or the Crown Prosecution Service, the British equivalent. They look at a case, and if they think, or if they're confident they would lose in court, They just don't take it any further, because it's always embarrassing for them, for the Crown, or for the DOJ. It's embarrassing to lose, so you just don't see what. Okay, the Los Angeles Slimes. It really is bad. I might take the Los Angeles Times off of this. What do you think, people? Let me know. The LA Times just does seem pretty crap. State and LA initiatives seek to tax wealthiest. Classic socialist stuff. Lawmakers split over calls to abolish ICE. And a story about American football. Does the Bow Show care about American football particularly? Are there enough American football fans, gridiron fans out there watching this? Well, they want me to update you on something like that the Rams overcome Caleb Williams' insane tying touchdown pass to beat Bears in overtime. Let me know if that's the sort of story you're interested in. I suspect not particularly. There'll be a few football fans out there, won't there, watching this, but I doubt it's very many. All right, let's go over to down under for the Aussies. Are ye not here to prop them up, Pauline Henson's Ayers government as support rises. That's the One Nation leader, Pauline Hanson, is eyeing government after a new poll revealed support for her party has snowballed to a huge 22%. Interesting for Australian politics, if that is the case. In this day and age, perhaps 22% is enough to, if not win government. to at least be a big, big player on the scene. Albanese avoids naming radical Islam as he's urged to apologise to Jewish communities. Again, Australia, that's a story, Australia trying to put through more laws to sort of curtail hate and hate speech in the actual wording of the legislation, as I understand it. No mention of radical Islam. Mad, isn't it? Mad. These people, they must be mad, literally mad. All right, let's move on. What are the Japanese looking at and talking about this morning? Oh, I've only got 5 minutes left. Let's have just a quick look. A snowboarding story. A story about wedding dresses. Story about taekwondo. All right, let's just move on. With only 5 minutes to go, let's have a quick look at what's happened on this day in history. I like this segment. I like this segment. So on the 19th of January, in the year 379 AD, Theodosius, one of the great Roman emperors, Eastern Roman emperors, Theodosius the First, sort of saved at least the Eastern Roman Empire from sort of Gothic and Vandalic invasions. In the year 379, Theodosius installed as co-emperor of the Eastern Roman Empire by Emperor Gratian, charged with repelling the Goths. Yeah, that's one of the points in history, just to let you know, where the sources fall off a cliff. Before that point, we've got a fair few sources, ancient sources, people writing in the ancient world, telling us what happened and in what order and how things happened. Around that time, around the age of Theodosius, that falls off a cliff. We fall into something of a dark age, just in terms, purely in terms of source material, before anyone gets all eggy about it. It's not a dark age, it was never a dark age. Talking about in terms of sources, first-hand primary sources. They sort of fall off a cliff at that point, and so the story, our view of history gets darker. The light of history is turned down. The Bunsen burner of the light of history is turned down at that point. Okay, in the year 1812, in the Peninsular War, this is, after a 10-day siege, Arthur Wellesley, better known as the first Duke of Wellington, orders British soldiers of the Light and Third Division to storm Ciudad Rodrigo during the Peninsular War. I've got all sorts of content, history-themed content, behind the paywall on lotusetus.com for my show, Epochs. There it is, Epochs. I've got all sorts of content talking about the Peninsular War and the life and career of Arthur Wellesley, the Duke of Wellington. Fascinated by the Peninsular War. Read tons and tons about it for years and years and years on end. That ended in a terrible... We eventually took Ciudad Rodrigo, but at a terrible cost, at a terrible price. Blast a breach in the wall and just send a forlorn hope in. Waves of men that got mowed down. Terrible bloodbath, the storming of Ciudad Rodrigo. Lots and lots of very brave men got slaughtered there. If memory serves, that was the one where Arthur Wellesley actually shed a tear afterwards. The Iron Duke, not the sort of man to shed a tear, but on that one he did, because it was so sort of hellacious. All right, we're very near the top of the hour, so let's read a few YouTube super chats. What have we got here? Neglectful Sausage says, as a dirty Mercian, sort of the Midlands, if anyone doesn't, as a dirty Mercian, I want Trump to tariff the EU countries for not closing borders and 6 foot roping the rest. Oh, 6 foot roping, okay. Yeah, right, yeah, fair enough. Kind of agree with you there, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Trump is within his rights to sort of get serious with EU countries that are trying to mess with his program, re-Greenland. Okay, same person, Neglectful Sausage, thank you for another $5, says, decolonise the USA and EU of any global southerners. Yeah, clear them out. We've got to clear them out. Get rid of them. Mass deportations, mass remigration is an inevitability. The Chronicles of Chris 942 says, why does no one ask the people living in Greenland? Well, I mean, I think they do. They have, to an extent. Every now and again, they'll be mentioned. I mean, There's not very many of them. The entire population of Greenland is something like 56, 57,000 people. A lot of those are basically Danish people. So like the actual truly sort of native Inuit descended people of Greenland. It's not a very big population. It's certainly not a giant population. And so both the Kingdom of Denmark and the United States of America are just such bigger powers. They'll do a token effort. What do you think? We'll do a little poll. And they nearly always say, we want to be our own thing, if anything. But neither Denmark nor the US want to hear that. Right? Those Inuit people of Greenland, I think, for a long, long time have said, we'd rather not even be ruled by Denmark, if anything. We should be our own thing, couldn't we? Shouldn't we? And Denmark are like, anyway, move on. So if Denmark aren't interested in that, the United States aren't going to be. And yet they still do pay some lip service to it. You know, when J.D. Vance went over there the other year, he talked to those people and said, we're on your side. If you let us control you, Greenland, you'll have so much more wealth. We'll invest so much more than Denmark ever did. It'll blow your mind how amazing Greenland will be if you let the United States control you. Probably not wrong as well. The US probably will invest way more money than Denmark ever could. That's probably not just an empty lie, I would have thought. Okay. Zajut 149 says, the Nobel Peace Prize has been handed out to war criminals and human traffickers. Right, yeah. Trump will only have his legacy tainted by getting it. Yeah, it's not a bad thing to say. Fair point. Absolutely fair point. I don't know why you would, any person that's like a straddling history, anyone that's like the president of the United States, somebody on that level, why you would still covet a Nobel Prize. Because they've been handed out to some bad people in the past. I wouldn't. If I was president of the United States, I wouldn't give a moment's thought about whether or not I was going to win or not win a Nobel Peace Prize. It just wouldn't register on my things to care about. But Trump seems to really care about it. Okay, we are the top of the hour. It has just struck 1 minute past 9 in the AM on Monday the 19th of January 2026. Thank you for watching. You've been part of the Bo Show, the glorious band that's chosen for you. It's Breakfast with Bo, the BBC, Bo's Breakfast Club. The Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club. Thank you for tuning in. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. Try and make it count. You'll only have this day once. Once it's gone, it's gone. Carpe diem. Seize the day if you can. I know it's not always possible. But if you can, attempt to seize the day. All right, well, until tomorrow then, take care.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.